Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it.
Great. So I was visiting the website of the studio, and the list is very long of the different awards and so on. So congratulations for the really good work.
Thank you.
And so I became like really curious about the team. How do you create a strong team?
Yeah. So that, I mean, at the very beginning, it was just me and Carlos, right? Like, you know, the two of us coming together and like, it was just nobody. But what we had, the two of us, you know, I am an architect, but an urban designer at the same time. I studied in Istanbul Technical University in both of those departments, in urban planning, a little less than architecture, but I had those two. And then I did my master's in Cornell University on urban design. And Carlos, you know, in Spain, their education system is a little different. So there are architects and engineers both at the same time. So I guess at the very beginning, you know, the two of us, we were like somehow were six and seven at the same time because of all those disciplines. But of course, it's not just enough like to be able to, you know, go through with all those projects and with all those like different cities only with two people. So in time, as we, you know, were getting more commissions and getting more contracts, the team started growing, and it still is somehow like fluctuating depending on the project and the situation. Currently we are five. But you know, like, so it consists of not only of architects, it's a team that we have landscape architects, we have you know, planners joining us now and then, we have architects of course, but you know, and even the architects that we are like hiring and we work with, they are not just architects, right? Like there are architects focusing on just the construction maybe, or you know, maybe they're looking at interior design, right? Like, so they have these very specific interest areas and backgrounds as well. So I think what makes OpenAct's team is this, I would say retrospectively now thinking about it, maybe the strength of being able to work in different scales and being able to compose all of those scales together.
So this is one, let's say if we mention like three elements. So this is one, the multidisciplinary within the team members. And two other elements, you think it's important to have a strong team?
Yeah, I would say the other thing is in internationality of it. I mean, this is kind of like, all right, I mean, it wasn't intended, right? Like, it's because Carlos is my partner in life, but also in business. And, you know, he's from Spain, I'm from Turkey, and we met in Germany, then we lived in the States, and then we have been doing projects since we have OpenAct anywhere in between Spain and Turkey, like anywhere in between, actually all of those in like, between countries, right?
Geographical.
Like geographically, exactly. We have projects over the Mediterranean. So I can just tell you that. I mean, so that internationality, in my opinion, working in such different areas also created the strength. Also, like, you know, us having different backgrounds coming from different cultures. And then how we blend those cultures, I guess, like that creates the synergy, in my opinion. That would be another strength, probably. And the third one is probably is being curious. I would say that is being curious. And because, you know, anyone, and anytime we hire someone new or anyone, anytime when there's a new intern, they're surprised by how much there is research and like before we are even touching anything about design, right? So there's that curiosity because, you know, I feel like it's really important to ask questions to be able to find good answers. As you're asking questions, you don't know which ones are good and which ones are bad. So the more curious you get, you can somehow filter the good and the bad ones. But, you know, it's just about getting curious and researching as much as possible. I think that will be the third one. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you stay curious?
I think that's a given in my personality. I can ask like so many questions about so many things, and all the cities that I go, like, you know, like just in Turin, yeah, for example, yeah. You know, I was walking around these fenced up places that you don't really know what's going on in there, and I really want to know, like, you know, why there's a bulldozer and how they carry that thing and why do they have to do it exactly that way.
Yeah,
would there be a different way to do it, you know, a better way to do it? I mean, this is a little bit like a personality trait, I would say, but also in my opinion, I find this methodologically the only way to create good design ideas, and I feel like that is a mission.
So let's talk about the project that was a finalist in the European Bauhaus.
So
European Bauhaus for some of us are a big thing and very complicated, and to be part of it or to submit. So how was the process?
Well, I mean, I want to kind of, if you allow me, take it a little bit back,
yes.
Because, you know, that project in Zagreb, Croatia, was also a competition project. It was an international competition project.
Okay.
And I also want to, like, I want to talk about this culture of competitions a little bit, because in my opinion, new European Bauhaus, you know, like if anybody out there wants to attend, you know, it is a competition. It is a place where you have to submit the project, and it is so good to be in that competition culture, in my opinion. And so the way how this project started was, it was a European competition. I don't know, maybe people in Europe, like, you know, architects in Europe, probably they will know it better. It's a competition that takes place every 2 years. In the last 40 years, it was around. And it's only open to the architects who are under 40 years old. So we attended to European competition in Croatia, and we got the first award through European, and that's how we get to actually, like, you know, meet with the Zagreb municipality and get familiar with Zagreb, right? Like, you know, I'm Turkish, Carlos is Spanish. We have no really relations with Croatia otherwise.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how it all started. And the new European Bauhaus ideals are so in parallel with what European does, because when they introduced new European Bauhaus, you know, it was such an exciting time. I remember beginnings of like 2021, we started talking about it, like much before the awards or anything, because you know, a lot of other competitions in Spain and the government bodies also started like giving information about this new program that Europe started pursuing. Because, you know, up until new European Bauhaus, you know, introduced this conversation, sustainability was something like much more about engineering, and it was more about technology, it was not something really architectural, nor it was anything beautiful. But how new European Bauhaus, you know, like composed it here, you know, they say sustainable, beautiful, and together.
Yeah.
So it is those three words, those three keywords, in my opinion, that are so key for architects and for designers right now, that, you know, all of a sudden sustainability was not just, you know, something that some genius engineer needs to come up with a solution for, right? Like, it was all of a sudden much more part of our daily lives. It was something that belonged to the community, and it's something that belonged to the aesthetics of our city as well. So I think, European and new European Bauhaus, in that sense, they were so parallel. So I would like recommend everyone to apply to both of these competitions, you know, if they are really interested in these topics.
Yeah. Are you like following these three values in your like coming project as well, or how is it?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, mainly we work on public projects, which means inclusiveness and participation is a must, you know, like, yeah, there's no way that we could do any kind of public space project without the inclusion of people who we are doing that for.
Yeah.
Especially when we are like, we are generally working in cities that are not necessarily our own cities. I mean, not in Istanbul. Istanbul is my city. Yes. So any project that we are doing there, I'm kind of like a local, but still I'm not specifically from that neighborhood, yeah, right? I wouldn't really know what exactly they would need, or if we are, when we are working for Zagreb, or, you know, we did a project for Bitonto in Italy, you know, we don't really exactly know. We don't have that experience as much as the people who are living in there. So inclusiveness is definitely one part of it. Sustainability has to be another aspect in all of the projects, because I mean, the world needs it, right?
Like, of course,
we are so late already. And any kind of proposal that we come up with for the cities right now, it needs to be thought through ecology. It needs to be thought through sustainability. So, and most of the time when we are doing these projects, we are generally working on areas that are somehow harmed and destroyed by the 20th century industry and by the 20th century urbanization. So we're always trying to find some solutions in 21st century, like, how can we recuperate those areas, you know, like, how could we heal those areas? But this healing is not just healing it like ecologically, it's also healing it socially,
yeah,
and it's also healing it, of course, beautifully too, right? Like, aesthetically as well. So exactly. Yeah, I would say that those three criteria are always apparent in our project.
Yeah. And you mentioned, like, you work with in project, like, not in your city. Mm-hmm. So how can we think when we work on a project that are abroad?
Yeah.
How can we understand the local context?
Yeah.
We're not from there.
Yeah.
So what is the approach you're doing?
I think that's why research is so prominent in our methodology, because, you know, I mean, I remember Zagreb was one of the first international projects we started doing in 2016 back then. And we've never been there, right? Like, I have no idea about Sava River, never seen it before. I don't even understand the scale of it, right? So researching becomes really, really important. And there are some tools we specifically employ meanwhile we're researching. So when I'm saying researching, you know, this research within the team is so diverse. Like, each team member will have a layer of information to follow up, but they will also be free to, you know, go off course, out of the trajectory, and like come up with something else if during the research they found something that was completely not planned and not like, you know, predicted for before. And so they will have like all of these different layers. Like, we will look at the history, we will look at old newspapers, we will look at the like the maps of the hydrological maps, we will look at the transportation maps, we try to see like the tweets about them, you know, what kind of Instagram posts there are, are there any like complaints online, or what people like about these places. So it's a lot of data, okay?
But this take a lot of the hours in the project. So how do you do it?
So this is one complaint, but at the same time, pride of my team. You know, we always spend so much time in the research part. Yeah. And then it's true that we suffer later as we're designing and we're trying to submit, you know, such a time. We have to pull so many all-nighters. But I feel like that's the only way, you know, like, where we can really, you know, come up with a good science solution. So, but, you know, for an architect, for an urban designer, could be really hard. Like, okay, so you have all this information, right? But how do you, you know, translate that into the space, right? How are you actually gonna like make something out of it? We use mapping as a technique, you know, for that. So we get all that information and we put it on the cartographic space so that we can actually see like the relationship of
it's like
all
FBI
of exactly yeah
you
exactly.
put like things pictures and dots like you know, see some picture like
exactly.
the image
exactly
because usually we tend to jump into the design as architect or urban designers and so on, like when we get the project, take a look on the site, and then be like, okay, this could be like this, this could be like this. But in your case, you're telling me that a lot of time is invested in the research.
Yeah, because you know what's the thing? So if we don't like research and we automatically start jumping on solutions, then what we do is like we're projecting so much our own dreams and imaginations as designers and architects, right? I mean, I understand that might be the case for a private project maybe, but you know, when you're working for public projects, that's, in my opinion, a really big no, right? Yeah, because that would be really not inclusive. That would be just like, you know, bringing your own ideals, dreams, you know, imaginations, like just like projecting them on people and like basically ordering them, this is how it's going to be, right? So I think that's why that's a very delicate matter, in my opinion, and that's a really important component to have research.
So within like public spaces and urban design, what do you see the three trends that happening now or going to happen?
Well, I mean, I can't answer it from our point of view. It's I would say adaptability, indeterminacy, and resiliency, which actually the three of them, they somehow play together.
Okay.
Because we are, I mean, so all of them are actually about change, right? Adaptability, indeterminacy, resiliency. All of them are about change and like unknown conditions and, you know, and being able to absorb those changes.
Yeah.
So this is, I believe, really, really important in 21st century because like from the beginning of the century, you know, since like when I was a student and then later I graduated, there was economic crisis, there is right now climate crisis, we had the pandemic crisis, we're having, you know, the wars right now. I mean, it's just, you know, one crisis after another. This is a century that is predominantly like, you know, defined by crisis.
Just started also.
Exactly. I mean, and the reason actually like, but if you think about it, the reason why we call something a situation crisis is because, you know, when you're not able to respond to it, the systems collapse, and that's when it's a crisis. But if the system is able to absorb that change and accept that change and respond to that change, you know, then it will just adapt itself and it will be resilient and it won't be collapsing. Then we won't be calling it a crisis.
True.
So I guess the issue here is maybe, you know, creating systems and creating spaces, infrastructure that is resilient, that is adaptable, so that we don't have to all the time destroy and rebuild, have crises, you know. And that's only because, you know, if we think of these infrastructure, if we think of these urban systems like things that are rigid, things that are you know, solid and like static, you know, like how 20th century design was thinking about, then they break really easily. But if we try to design systems that are flexible, that are open for change, that are adaptable, that are dynamic, then they can actually absorb these things that are unknown right now, right? Like we always think and say as we're designing, okay, we don't know how this public square is going to be used from 50 year. Like I can't even
guarantee.
I wouldn't even know, like, you know, what's going to happen. It's impossible for a designer to be able to like guess what's going to happen. But what you can do is to introduce systems for it to be able to adapt and adjust itself so that it doesn't need to be, you know, broken, collapsing and, you know, or like, you know, destroyed at some point.
Yeah. So it's like more flexible design.
It is.
What do you think that, now I'm saying urban designer, but this include the landscape, architects and so on, should stop doing when we design spaces between buildings?
Yeah, so actually it's really great that you mentioned, you know, the all the disciplines like separately because I guess what we shouldn't be doing is like, you know, so this is another, like, I'm always comparing 20th century and 21st century quite a lot in this conversation. Sorry about that. But but another thought, a way of thinking that 20th century introduced was this separations of like professions, right? Like, so in 20th century, we started calling someone architect, landscape architect.
Very niche, yes.
Urban planner, like these of course, those experts, expertise areas are necessary. But what happened also in 20th century that this differentiation between the disciplines, like we somehow got more focused in our own niches and we stopped having conversations in between. And that's what I see is a huge problem, because then different scales do not work together with each other.
Yeah, because and people behind the scales.
Exactly, right? Like they are different. They don't really have this like interaction in between them. And I think that is the one thing that we can't afford to have right now. Like there's no way. And again, this is going to come back to the conversation, right? Like we need to be able to work together and have those conversations, and we can't afford not to have them. Mm. I think that's like one big no, because then again, we would be creating different scale solutions that are rigid, that are only working for themselves, and not that are really prone to collapsing.
So stop doing is that stop only thinking about your path or your profession or your niche. And have more conversation.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this year calls the European Year of Skills. Mm-hmm. So what are the new skills that we should learn or develop in order to like create more beautiful, sustainable, and together spaces?
I mean, for urban designers or for architects, for designers in general, for spatial designers, let's call it that way, I would say that, you know, not only the designs that we're creating are adaptable, but also ourselves, we have to be adaptable to, right? Like, you know, when it comes to skills, especially now we are fighting with AI, right? Like, I feel like that should become, like we should also be adaptable, and we should also absorb changes. And it would be really interesting to ask these questions, how we're going to be introducing, you know, AI to our daily lives, to our daily skill set also, right? Like, how is that going to become part of our, daily tools, like basically. So it's really important to be open to changes. I'm like, again, I mean, the name of Open Act, my practice comes from that, being open, right? So being open, in my opinion, is the main skill set. And then with that, you will be able to accept, invite, and absorb all those changes and make meaning out of it later.
Okay.
Later
on. Yeah. Are you having a conversation with AI?
Yeah. Yeah, since last year. I mean, I use it
How do you use it?
I use both the ChatGPT and also DALL-E. So both of them play a part. Both meanwhile thinking about projects, sometimes about the research in the university. Of course, you know, there are so many mundane things also they do, like for me, like answering emails, right?
Okay.
A kind of time-saving things. But also while researching, you know, it's like you said, researching takes a lot of time. So AI here is really helpful while actually composing that research from so many different like areas and disciplines. So we found so much usefulness in actually working with AI in that case. And with the visuals, we work with DALL-E a little bit, also with Midjourney. We try to introduce a little bit ours, with our style of how we visualize, but having the help of AI, it actually made it like so much faster. And sometimes it also does some mistakes, right? Okay. That are so interesting too. So from those mistakes, all of a sudden you have these like coincidental explorations that are happening all of a sudden, and it was really, really interesting to see them. I don't know where exactly this will lead us, but like it's not something planned, but
So tell me about the future. What is waiting for you, project, competitions, and so on?
So currently we still have our projects, our large urban scale projects continuing. We have two of them right now. One is under construction in Istanbul, Turkey, in Tuzla. And the other one is again in Istanbul, this time in the islands, in one of the islands of Istanbul. We are transforming the central part of the neighborhood and the waterfront of it. So there are these two projects that we're working with, and with the people there, with participatory processes. So this is quite interesting, and it's interesting because, you know, in Istanbul It was not really a thing before, like to have these participatory processes, to ask people, to invite actually the citizens, the people from the neighborhood, and ask them what they want, right? Yeah. Like it was just really like completely top down, and a project was coming and you had to just make your peace with it. So this is new, and seeing that, and somehow like trying to come up with like ways to how to engage, like, you know, with the citizens is interesting.
Yeah, it's because like different cities or nations have different culture when it comes to engagement.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, how was it in Istanbul? Did people like want to be engaged in this, or no, they want just leave it to you, architects?
It's really interesting. I was thinking that because, you know, nobody really was doing anything participatory up until now, this wouldn't be probably interesting to the people. But in both of the cases, both in our project for Tuzla in Istanbul and for Büyükada in the islands, people have immense amount of interest actually, because the moment you just welcome them, they really embrace the project and they really are feeling like, okay, yeah, this is going to be a place that they are going to be using, right? Because me as the architect, first of all, I don't live there. Second of all, once the project is done, probably like, you know, how many times in a year I'm going to go there, I don't even know. Maybe
zero.
It can be never, right? So it's really important that they embrace it. And it was great seeing it there in Tuzla especially. So we had this... there was these huge talks going on behind the doors in the municipality, you know, so we are working with the metropolitan municipality, but the local municipality over there didn't want to pedestrianize some of the streets. Okay, they were saying like, no, we really need these streets, like these are really vital for the traffic. It was not, but there are these two streets that are touching the river,
okay,
like asphalt touching the river. You know, it's like so crazy, like we can't that, right? and we said, look, you are actually using them as like car park areas, like they're not even really functioning as trees, come on, like you don't really need them. And they were like, no, we really need it. We said, okay, how about we try it out for 2 months, we just put some like temporary barriers and see what people thinks about it, let's see if it's like causing any kind of traffic problems or not. And we said, okay, in the meantime, in those 2 months, how about we paint some like patterns on the ground and like organize some events for the kids, right? I know it's a little manipulative, but we were like, okay, if we were able to bring the kids out here on the street, like families would come as well, and seeing their kids playing on the asphalt, none of the parents would actually want any kind of traffic over there.
No.
And that happened, right? Cool. Like the moment we invited them, they actually started giving us so many information. Like they are there, they live there, they provided us with so many feedback, you know, like how in winter that place is. You know, once upon a time somebody fell over to the river, they start telling you these stories, and you start thinking about, okay, what kind of security measures I can actually think about there. So they open like the eyes of the designer as well, like having this interaction with the people who are living there, and it's really, really valuable for the design process. So I was shocked that, you know, they were open to have it.
Cool.
And I'm really, really happy that this happened.
Yeah. But like in this project, you manipulated the outcome.
Somehow.
Is this inclusion of people, of citizens? Is this their voice or... Not really.
Yeah.
If you understand like my point of this.
Yeah, I understand. It's true that it was a little manipulation, right? Like bringing the kids over there, automatically the parents, they could favor their cars over their kids. I don't know if that would be possible. but yes, I feel like it was a spark that started a conversation.
Yeah.
So I see it that way. It's not so manipulative in my opinion, right? Like because nobody forced the kids to go down there, and nobody forced the families to go down there. They just saw some patterns and they just come along. So in my opinion, so that was like open and inclusive.
I think also sometimes when it's like the first time, you need also to inspire people, because they have never been something like this.
They're
so
not used to it.
Maybe they don't have so much ideas or experience of how this process is going.
So
sometimes, like let's say manipulation/inspiration could be a good start.
Yeah, I like that.
In the end, they always have the word to say no, like to disagree with what you do.
Yeah.
Okay, even if their kids are there, but like if they see it makes no sense or they don't like it, they will go against you.
Yeah. And if it wasn't a reality, if it was really creating a traffic problem, probably, you know,
they will react.
There will be a reaction as well.
So now we are in the last section of this episode, and real happy to talk to you, and I'm grateful that you give your time during these three amazing days. So first one, what keep you motivated to do what you do?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. But I think it's the sense of, I always called myself a constant nomad. I go from here to there all the time. And I get curious. And I think that curiosity, you know, has always been key. This is a really personal question, sorry. And the answer is coming out quite personal. But yeah, I think that curiosity is what drives me. And that curiosity is particularly about cities. And it has been, and I guess it's going to continue being that way. And it's not just, you know, traveling through them. It's like I was called in here in this event, is exploring them and coming up and asking questions about them and coming up with some potential design solutions.
Yeah.
I think that.
And if you give a message to Zahul, what is your message to her?
I think we are, like, you know, so the messages that I would give right now because of the event Utopian Hours, you know, so the name suggests that this is a manifesto for a new city making. And these manifestos, like the word manifesto, could maybe paint a picture in people's minds as something huge and like something radical. My message is that, you know, like, don't be alarmed. It doesn't have to be something huge and radical. Like, you know, big conversations and big changes will always start with like very small interventions and very small sparks. And when you put it that way, it's really not scary. It seems really achievable. It seems really, really doable. And that gives like lots of hope to all of us.
So like you have this like a mindset of like, okay, start small conversation and slowly scale up.
Because that's how I do. Whenever I set myself like a big target, I try to digest that into smaller like tasks to be able to overcome that, because otherwise it's just like so overwhelming, right?
So thank you so much, Zahul, for giving your time.
Thank
I'm really
you.
Happy to talk with you. Greetings to you and to the team, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Thank you. This was really a delight for me too.